Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey, dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Hello. I think we're on now, Smiley.
I've been vibing to these tunes. Absolutely vibing.
I wish I could just, here we go. Oh, here we go too. Yeah. Let's get started there, because for all of you there, first of all, thank you for joining us. I'm Charlie Hume. He's Smiley Kaufman from a hotel room fresh off the Golf Channel broadcast at the Shriners Children's Open. And this is the part of the show, if you're joining us live on X or on YouTube, first of all, thank you for being here. Second of all, if you're watching this later on YouTube or on podcasts, we're going to do about 10 minutes of talking about everything but the Shriners Children Open to let people arrive here and get in the lobby and get in the chat, things like that, so we can all interact. But for those that are here live now and caught the first 40 seconds of what I believe was Minimal House is what they're calling it. That was kind of a bop.
It was vibing, man. I wish my camera was up. Next time, can you have my camera up when the lobby's going? Like, we'll be right back. Like, or it's show starting soon, but then have me absolutely just running a disco session.
I kind of like that. Maybe us in the bottom right corner, like just mics cut and we're just, you know, just doing all
room
of our dances.
Room service here. You're going to have to keep dancing here.
Okay. Smiley ordered room service.
Filibuster here.
I'm filibustering. This is, as I mentioned at the top, we appreciate you being here. I'm glad this happened off the top of the show. I believe this is the second recorded time I guess the last one was not in the live setting, but the last time we had room service delivered during the show, it was Kevin Kisner, who was previewing his start at the Sony Open, I believe, and was right in the middle of a extremely entertaining and hilarious story about playing at the Zurich Classic with Scott Brown and Jason Duffner. So if you haven't watched that episode, you should go watch it because it was, I think you can hear the ding of his doorbell in his hotel room in Hawaii as his room service is arriving. But this time we just had a little light knock, and Smiley's back with a glass of red. What do we order?
Just whatever the cab was. It was time.
Solid cab. I got to say, that's been one of the great. I think I told you, I decided to lay off the sauce a little bit after Remember Guest. I was on a little bit of a run there. And that lasted all the way until our baby girl arrived so that my wife could start having wine again. And we've been getting into some real good wine the last couple of weeks. I missed it. I missed it greatly. So good to be back, you know.
Good to be back indeed. So let's get this going.
Let's get this going. Well, again, as we mentioned, we're about 4 or 5 minutes in now. But before we get to the action at the Shriners, JT Poston wins his third tour event. Friend of the show. Also, how about that? Just a couple of girl dads celebrating another girl dad. Shout out to his daughter, Scotty. That's a very, very cool win for him. But you are up. You called this. You were in the booth for Golf Channel in Stamford, Connecticut. And what that meant for our purposes is you got to play a lot of good Northeast golf this past week, and from what I'm hearing, the golf game's pretty good right now. So here's what I want you to do. All right, on a scale that spans from I hope my clubs do not come off the luggage belt and I never see them again. Two, I could have defended my title at the Shriners this week. Where are we on the Smiley golf game optimism scale?
I'm getting closer. I think my tee to green game is starting to feel better, starting to drive it better. I played two rounds, so I wouldn't call it a lot of golf, enough to where I felt really sore after playing the next day, but I got to play some great golf courses. And as far as the luggage belt goes, I would put it at, give me a 7. I'm ready to go out, grab my clubs.
Wow.
I got some things I need to work on with my short game. Saw James Siekman earlier in the week, excited about some of the stuff we're going to be doing with him. And, chipping definitely needs some help. I've been kind of faking it a little bit,
okay.
But the driver was really good for the most part. Feel excited about that. The putter hasn't gone anywhere. We know that. So, the two golf courses I play, though, one's Piping Rock. It was in the Locust Valley. CB McDonald was heard such good things about it. And we played the blue tees, so it was a little shorter, kind of in maybe the mid 6,000, so not overly long from the tees that we played. And the golf course was so firm. It played like a Lynx golf course. It's the first time I've played a golf course up in this area that has been brick hard. The greens were so fast, and it just required so much creativity. So the greens had unique shapes to them. You know, you had some classic Baritz holes, you had a Redan hole, and we played in some windy conditions, and it was kind of cool as well. So like two or three layers the whole day. But I shot under par, so I can report that. I played the par threes, I think four over, so I made enough birdies. But like it was just so well designed par threes, man. I was hitting good shots and just ending up in places that were just tricky, hard to make pars from where I was. And 1-3 putt, I think another where I chipped up there and kind of whacked it around. But man, I you can't go wrong in this area. Like it's unbelievable how good the golf is. I feel like I'm catching it too. Like mid-October in this area, all the tree leaves. I'm telling you, Charlie, like driving into my second golf course that I played, besides Magnolia Lane at Augusta National, this was one of my favorite drives into a course I've ever experienced, because they had, I believe it's the maple trees that really change colors. I'm not positive. I'm not a tree expert, not a tree podcast, so we can't give you exactly what tree it is, but it's the tree that changes from green to red to yellow to orange and all the fun colors. And they had all these trees lining the drive all the way in. So it was amazing. Century Club was terrific too. A golf course I'm excited to go back and play. And honestly, one of my favorites I've played in the area.
It is such a good, so if you'll allow me to put my golf course nerd hat on,
please.
And by the way, we're only half of a not tree podcast. Cause I happen to be, it's actually funny. I had an extensive conversation with someone earlier. My son had a little get together for my son's second birthday, and we were discussing some tree plants I have in my backyard. I'm a big time tree nerd. I have a tree guy here who was like a forestry major at the University of Rhode Island. I'm a big tree guy. So I'll say, yeah. So this Piping Rock, as you mentioned, CB McDonald course. And I think the cool thing about it is it's the first course CB did after he did National, which is obviously one of the most iconic designs in all of American golf. There are obviously these different cradles of that golden age of American golf architecture, and that the greater New York area is one of them. And National is the first one that sort of put him on the map in 1907. So he goes from there to Piping Rock and does, obviously fantastic work there. Shout out to my aunt and uncle, David and Virginia Apple, that are members up there. I love playing. I've only played it like a handful of times, but it's always, you know, a really, really cool classic test. But yeah, dude, that's glad you got to play that. Glad you're playing well. Seven's about as optimistic as I've heard you ever.
Maybe not. So. I wouldn't go like well. I would say that I'm playing to where I don't carry two balls in my pocket this week. So I had just had one ball. I think I lost two over the two rounds, which I'm very, very pleased with. My grip finally feels good. Any player that knows when their grip feels terrible, most of the time you're going to be compensating somewhere in the golf swing. So my grip feels good. So I'm starting to have my lines match up at setup. And the longer I play this game, the more I'll start to remember and realize that the fundamentals is where this game starts. if your fundamentals stink, you're going to stink. And right now, I feel like my grip's starting to get better. My just overall setup is much more balanced to where the stuff I am doing in the gym and what I feel like I'm trying to do to load in the golf swing is actually starting to happen. So positivity, heading into more golf this fall. But yeah, great trip. But I still have so many golf courses on my bucket list up here. It just makes me excited to come back a year and keep checking golf courses off my list.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I've played less in the Northeast than I really would like to, obviously, given the number of courses up there. Played a fair amount of Deepdale. My brother moved to Austin now, so I can't do as much of Deepdale. Not National is number one on my bucket list. Just absolutely dying to do the lobster lunch up there with the jacket and see the windmill, the whole nine yards. I mean, it just sounds like one of the coolest golf experiences on earth. So
it is. That one's probably the most fun golf course. I wouldn't say it's the most challenging. I don't think it's overly long. I think there's the second hole I hit like 4-iron onto the green for a par 4. So there's, you know, if you play the blue tees, which most of the time the members play, it's not long. It's an easy, fun golf course. You have all these cool design features, and you said it, the lobster lunch can get very fun after the round. Yeah,
a little south side of National with some lobster.
Oh my god,
cannot be there. And so I've been told. I wouldn't know, but I've heard reports. Sounds fantastic. And also, look at, we got some people back here participating in the comments again. Gary Clemens, longtime viewer of the show, listener of the show, commenter, and we do live shows. Good to see you, Garrett. Also a North Carolina guy. So shout out to JT Post, and he's celebrating this win. And have you heard of Mimosa Hills? Garrett, yes, I have, because that
we're brothers.
It's a Donald Ross design, and the sort of more the west of me and
it's
Durham.
It's in North Carolina.
It is. It's a North Carolina course.
They play some mini tour events there. G Pro Tour plays out there.
Really, really cool route. I've never played it, but again, that's another one that I've heard is like fantastic. And sort of a, you know, if you know type of situation. Jackson, of course, our guy Jax in the comments. Also a big tree guy, also a big water guy, Jax. So that's good to see you here, buddy. What do you think, Smiley? Any more on Northeast golf, or should we get right into the Shriners now?
Before we get there, the one thing I want to talk about just golf in New York, what would be the golf course besides National that you're maybe even like one that's not just, you know, an obvious New York golf course that's like, oh, well, everybody wants to play there. Like, what's one that you've heard about that's a bit of an uncut gem, if you will, that nobody talks about that's really good? I mean, the one I would recommend to you would be the two that I just played, Piping and Century both. I would go back there tomorrow and would be so happy about it.
So it's a good, I mean, National has been number one on my bucket list for so long that like, that's just, I have this obsessive thing about it. I will say this and shout out again to the Apple family. So they're also members at a place out of Locust Valley called The Creek that I heard is phenomenal.
Phenomenal. There's three of them there. I think it's Piping Rock, The Creek, and then there's another one, and it makes up, I think it's called the Golden Bell. Is that what they called it?
Could be. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask.
Yeah. You know what was cool about the Century Club? There was a group of eight guys that were playing behind us, and it was like an inner club match, or I shouldn't say inner club match. It was clubs represented from that area. So you had two guys playing from Century. You had two guys playing from Sleepy Hollow. Yeah, two guys playing from another course and two guys playing from another course. I think Somerset was one. I think those were the guys who won. But they do it every year. They had this trophy that was really small. It looked like the Triwizard Cup. And
it's time of year. Everyone who's rewatching Harry Potter this time of year, jump in the comments. Let us know where you're at.
And I just was thinking to myself, like, good for these guys for coming up with doing two of anything for any club, it's hard to do because everybody always wants to be in on the action. So to only limit it to just two guys, I think was hard to do, but really fun to, you know, a good idea for anybody that wants to find a buddy and then go and try to play against three other clubs in town and get a trophy. And I think the two guys that won poured beer into their trophy right after the deal. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool. I wanted to give a shout out to those guys.
That's awesome. I think, you know, I love the sort of the inner club with the right sort of vibe, but I especially think it's cool when it is at an elite club where you might from the outside, depending on the nature of the club, think, oh, this is probably a lot of, you know, movers and shakers in American society that are maybe rarely there and have some, you know, big residence in another place and they fly and it's a lot of guest play. I love the clubs in that upper echelon where the members are super, super, super invested either year round or in the season where you go and play. Seminole's a lot like that, where like those guys are just playing with fellow members the entire winter season when they're down there, instead of kind of like bringing in a ton of guests. I think it's cool having an active club like that in a club where you can travel your buddies, go play in a match somewhere else. So yeah, how about that, man? Now I need to, and it's almost too late now. It's end of October. Like golf season in New York, it's probably shutting down here in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I'm going to be coming back up here for the RSM, and that's the week before Thanksgiving.
Ooh.
And so I'm thinking like maybe they catch, I know some of the clubs shut down right around now and some of the greens get punched, but who knows? Maybe some of these golf courses are going to still be good. But I got to give a shout out to the people that hosted us. Duke Barnett hosted us out at Piping Rock, and he was a great host. We actually got picked up over in Rye and took a boat across to wherever the golf course is, Locust Valley. It was across the sound, and we're flying 50 miles an hour in this boat. And it was crazy because I thought we were going to be outside. I'm ready to be so cold and wet. We get there, and they had this inside insulated heat boat that we're in.
Wow.
And it made it so much easier because in traffic it would have taken us an hour and a half. I met another fellow named Rob Stryker, and he was the one that hosted us out at the Century Country Club, and he was the one that set up the game where I played golf with Maury, the talk show host.
Maury Povich, you are not the father.
It was amazing. And by the way, What an epic swing this guy has. Doesn't miss a fairway. And he birdied the first two holes on me. I'm like, I got to show up. Maury's going to beat me straight up today. And it's going to suck. He's 85 years old. Couldn't have been nicer.
Wow.
So it was a lot of fun getting to hear stories from him and how Maury got started. I asked if he wanted to come on the podcast. He said yes. So,
wow,
we're going to have to get that one dialed in here pretty soon.
That is phenomenal. That's one of my, you know, on the guilty pleasure TV Mount Rushmore.
He really did.
There is nothing. I can't tell you how many times I got sucked into a Maury hole. Like, just, you know, you turn the TV on, you stop, you're like,
I can't right now. Like,
I got to find out, is he the father or not? Like, this is getting crazy. They just brought someone else from backstage. It's amazing. Dude,
he was telling me that that all the time athletes would come up to him and practice was supposed to start, and all of the team was in there waiting on the results because they were all gambling on it. It was so good to hear.
That is phenomenal. Gambling on Maury.
He mentioned Shaq. Shaq was one of the guys they said that used to gamble on it all the time, so on whether it was the father or not.
And has to be like, that's sort of the forerunner to modern reality television. You know what I mean? The studio audience setting where they're introducing more and more ridiculous storylines and characters. Like, that definitely beats are stolen from that to make modern day reality television, without a doubt.
I asked him if he ever knew the answers in the paternity test. He said no. He said that would have ruined his questions. So he found out blind, just like everybody else.
See, but that's something he can't tell you. Like, it's like asking a magician, you know, about their tricks. Like, he's never going to tell you that he knows the answers. He has to give you the full sales pitch, which I respect, by the way. You got to do it. You got to play the character.
Guy's a legend. And you know what's even better? He asked, you know, what would you take in the Tennessee-Alabama game? And I gave him a winner. So even better, like, I left, you know, friends with Maury, and then I also gave him a winner. So that was a good day. It was a really good day.
That was a thriller. Cannot believe Texas got beat as bad as they did. Although I guess the second half was a little bit different from the first half. And your Tigers.
Big
another win. LSU
people forget
keeps it rolling.
We're top of the SEC right now, so... just don't look at how USC is doing, the team we lost to week one. Not good, Bob.
Yeah, you know, but that's all right, though. You can lose one now. 12-team playoff. It's like, it's less pressure. So that's a lot of talk about things that aren't the Shriners Open.
What are you talking about? People love that talk.
People do love that talk. I'm just saying, if you have been patient enough at this point in the podcast, if you're listening to this a day later, thanks for sticking with us, because let's talk a little bit of PGA Tour golf now. You were in the booth, of course, this week. JT Poston gets his third win on tour, his first since the 2022 John Deere, when he was, of course, a member of the Frat House Club that just produces winners every single year. It was fun seeing Patton Kizzire waiting for him on the back of the 18th green, giving him a big hug. Ben Coles as well, I think I saw back there. So just watching JT come down the stretch, one of the better putters on tour, little shaky at 16 and 17, and did not have a tap in on 18, and had to watch Doug Gim make a birdie putt that he needed to make that par putt or go to a playoff. So just take a stock of what was kind of a weird week with crazy wind, wild weather. To see JT get this win, you know, what were your impressions of the week at the Shriners?
Well, it was a wild week. You know, when I hopped on our production call and the first thing we do is bring in the meteorologist, I'm like, is it going to rain in Las Vegas? So that never happens. He's like, we are expecting 50-mile-an-hour gusts overnight on Thursday and into Friday.
It could explain really why? Bad.
Like, I don't know. It was some type of low-pressure front. As I will claim to be somewhat of a weather guy. I feel like
that makes one of us.
Like, there's three things I can do. It's somewhat play golf, it's somewhat broadcast, and then look at a weather map and know what the heck's going on. So it's kind of like the
and sing Drops of Jupiter karaoke.
It's kind of like my three pillars of things I can do. No, I mean, I can't really do that, because every year my New Year's resolution is that I can finish Drops of Jupiter without losing my voice. So I can't even do that good. So
it's real shame. Real shame. Yeah, so the wind, very strange, right?
This golf course, it really does deliver on that backside. It reminds me a lot of TPC Highlands and Travelers, where there's a drivable par four that nobody lays up on. So there's not that risk reward. It's like, oh, everybody's going to hit it up there. Well, who's going to make eagle, and who's going to make birdie, and who's going to lose the golf tournament on those holes? And when you have a par five on 9, 13, and 16, two of those holes, you're hitting short irons in there for a par five. So huge opportunities. And it was such a good back nine, of the fact that like JT like took the golf tournament by the horns, but then Doug Gim, who was in the wrong side of the wave in that late early wave, which nobody wanted that text message this week that they were in that wave. And so Doug Gim played his way in the final group, so did Kurt Kitayama, Davis Thompson. All three of those dudes played much better than everybody else. The fact that they had to play in much worse conditions, but that's how it goes sometimes, and you got to give credit for, you know, JT going out there and pulling off the shots when he did. But I think it came down to the 11th hole and the 14th hole, where Doug Gim hit it to 5-6 feet on 11, and then he hit it to about 5-6 feet, maybe a little longer than that on 14, and missed both the putts. And it came down to one shot, and that's what eventually came down to after JT made it a little bit more interesting than he was trying to. I think that was the putt on 16 was weird to see him miss. The 17 putt was very weird miss. And then 18, I'm like, oh my gosh, is he going to make this? So fun that we had drama at the end. And it's fun to crown another fifth major.
Perfectly said. I wish they give. Do the winners get those hats, the Shriners hats?
No,
those are strictly for Shriners.
Yeah.
I wish they'd give one of those out, because that would be a very unique looking hat. Or like if they used it as a tee marker, I feel like they got a lot of, you know, like a replica of that. Like they got the FedEx trucks at some of those events, or the John Deere trucks. Anyway, I digress. JT, I just want to talk a little bit about JT, because this is a guy that, you know, we've had on the show, has a ton of talent. As you mentioned, great putter, despite some of the, you know, maybe minor hiccups, pressure related on 16 and 17, and a guy who finished 41st, you know, inside the top 50 in a signature event. So had a great season by any metric that defines, you know, what you're going to take into the next season, what money you made. But the last time he topped 10 this season was back at the RBC Heritage in April, 18 cuts and 23 starts. So I just wonder, you know, where you think this win takes him. And looking back at his year, like, would you expect him to win more? Do you feel like where he ended up 44th is about right for this season? And what do you think this does for him taking him into the fall and into 2025?
Well, it's, you know, a guy like JT, he didn't have to play this week. You know, he's a guy inside of the top 50. He knows exactly what he's playing in next year. But the reason why I think he did play was it's a golf course that he likes. He's played well. He's had two top fives here. And he was outside the top 50 in the official world golf ranking. So when you come in at 64th, hey, you got an opportunity to go try to make a push and make the Masters. And boy, did he make a good push winning this week. Obviously, he's going to get him into the Masters, but it helps him get into any of the other majors that currently he's not in, which would be the Open Championship and the PGA. Maybe he is in the PGA for winning. I can't remember if that's one of them. Regardless, U.S. Open, well, I think PGA you may get in, but U.S. Open and the Open Championship, that's all world ranking. So important win for him that he should jump up inside the top 50 heading into an offseason where I think he may play RSM. I'm not sure if he's playing Zozo next week, but big win for JT, and always fun to keep stacking wins on the PGA Tour, going from, you know, there's a lot of one-time winners. I'm one of them, but not a ton of three-time winners, and he's kind of working his way up.
Yeah, huge in all of those senses. And I think also, as we kind of look at some of these fall events, and, you know, a lot of them are about positioning, you know, that next 10 as we head into the next season for signature events, and then also that top 125 to keep cards. So just a quick look at who is currently 51 through 60, which would comprise that next 10: Mackenzie Hughes, Harris English, Seamus Power, Patrick Rogers, Matt McNealy, Tom Kim, Justin Rose, Nick Taylor, Jake Knapp, and Kevin Yu. So all those guys, you know, maybe play a few more times this fall, but, you know, in the driver's seat, at least to get into the signature events via that next 10 category. Doug Gim jumps 23 spots to 70th. Mm-hmm. So for him, more or less, he's locked up his car for next season.
Yeah, he is. And that was a good week for him. Michael Kim, also another guy that had a really big week jumping in and I would say getting closer to locking up his card. So congrats to Michael Kim for his good play, and as well as Doug Gim. But yeah, you know, it's fun to see guys, you know, answer the bell when they have to. One guy that I would say could have been a huge storyline was Gary Woodland, being in that second to last group, a player that came in at 148 on the FedEx Cup. We all know what he's been through, winning the US Open at Pebble Beach, such an iconic venue, and dealing with all of the stuff, having brain surgery and all that he dealt with before and after, to see him back playing, I know can be considered a dang miracle that he's back playing this quickly. So I really hope Gary has a nice finish to the year, because it gets really complicated for him just having to play off of past champion status and exemptions. So I would really love to see Gary, you know, I think he's inside the top 140-ish now, so he's going to need, you know, probably another top four, top five to make the jump to top 125. He's obviously playing good, so Gary would be the next guy I would say that would be a fun storyline to follow to see if he can get inside that top 125.
Yeah, Gary jumps. He's projected to jump from 148 to 137, and he is a sponsor exemption into next week's Zozo Championship field with 78
guys.
Gets
free
points. Yeah, so what could, if he just keeps moving up, a couple more chances this fall, would be really, really cool to see him get in. A guy this week that was you kind of reported on this, covered this, you know, on the broadcast. Very strange start of the week for Joel Damon, with the, you know, carrying an extra 4-iron, I believe it was, carrying 15 clubs, got that max 4-shot penalty, and then with all the delays related to weather, decides to withdraw after, I believe he shot 76 in the first round, withdraws before round two, and as a result of that, slides from just inside that top 125 of 124 down to 129. And I'm checking right now. He is a sponsor exemption into the Zozo this next week.
Huge.
So, just for Joel, I mean, it's the same thing on the other side as Gary Woodland. It's like you just really have to make the most of these fall starts if you're in and around that line. And this week, I mean, what do you leave this week? Are you, you know, is
it's
it
my
just
nightmare,
a,
man? It's my
terrible
nightmare, and it came to fruition for him. I mean, I know that they both probably saw it and just said, you know, that ain't idea. I know probably Gino probably wore it the worst. You know, he's, I wouldn't say responsible for everything that makes it into the bag. And, you know, it's the player's fault too, but I feel like the caddy probably takes more responsibility for it. Although it's a team, you consider yourself a team out there. The interviews, they, you know, Joel handled it as good as he could, but it does stink, you know, because he had been playing some decent golf coming into it. So definitely frustrating. And I guess my question to you is on this is, it's a maximum of a 4-stroke penalty. So he was given a 2-stroke penalty on one and a 2-stroke penalty on two. And because there's a maximum 4-stroke penalty, why can you just keep 15 in your bag? Or is that a disqualification once you self-report the violation?
That's a fantastic question, and one that I'm sure we could dive into the USGA rules app and get a good explanation for. But I mean, as you laid out that way, it would make a lot of sense to keep using the 4-iron. I'm wondering, what was it? And maybe you have information on this. Was it like he was testing multiple long irons, or did he have an extra wedge in the bag?
No idea.
I'm wondering what the utility value of the extra club was.
I think I heard maybe 2 4-irons were in the bag. I don't know if it was like a 2 different types, but that would be my question, is because, hey, if Phil Mickelson's allowed to hit a moving golf ball that's rolling off of the green and completely change, you know, what could have happened after that? I know Phil played his way out of that deal at the US Open, but it's, you know, if he's allowed to hit a moving ball and not get disqualified, what says you can't just take your maximum 4-stroke penalty and keep 15 in the bag? I don't know.
There's a lot. I mean, listen, there are a lot of ways the rules are meant to be, bent and manipulated to, you know, if you can make them work in your favor, definitely go do it. Dan Lanning put 12 guys on the field for Oregon in that big win over,
it's just weird that it's a maximum of only 4 strokes, right? Like, it seems, I always thought it was more than that. So found out on 4T, so I thought he was going to have a 6-stroke penalty, but it's a maximum of 4.
That's what was interesting to me in listening to you talk about on the broadcast, was I was like, wait a second, I know we're not math guys, but if he's on the 4th hole and it's 2 shots a hole, aren't we at 8 shots? But so yeah, if it's 4-stroke max. It's an interesting one, but obviously for him, it's the same thing as Gary. Go out, play good at Zozo this week and get some, not free points, but easier to win points in a shorter field and see if you can get back inside that top 125.
Yeah.
Do you want to go over that Zozo field now? I know I texted it to you, but
let me pull it up right here. Yeah, I got it up right here. I had forgotten that it was a smaller field. Part of me was thinking that it was a bigger field, but you got some players. You know, Colin Morikawa won last year. He's back to defend his title. Justin Thomas went over there to play. The alternates, I think, is the most interesting, right? So Taylor Montgomery, Michael Kim, Dylan Wu, Pearson Cootie. These are all those players that you kind of mentioned that are, you know, I think all those guys are just right around that 125 mark. So this is interesting for all the guys like Gary Woodwin, who got an opportunity, Joel Damon, who got an opportunity, and somehow maybe even some other players that are outside the top 125, whoever we're missing, to be able to earn free points while other guys aren't playing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's interesting too, because there are a lot of sponsor exemptions given to Japanese players, as there should be, because that's their one event they host over there. But those are not guys that play regularly on the PGA Tour, you know, playing Asian Tour or wherever else. So
they can earn points then.
They can't. Right. Correct. I guess I'm just saying that it makes a 78 player field feel like even less, because those guys aren't playing for points and it's even shorter. So, yeah, it's one of those ones where I think we talked about it last year. We're like, did you catch any of this other than like highlights? Like, it happened in the middle of the night. You wake up, leaderboard. Like, at least with some European events, the nice part about it is you can wake up and watch, you know, the final 6 holes of each round in the morning as you're having a cup of coffee. Zozo happens in the middle of the night and you're like, I cannot wake up that early. Although I guess I'm on newborn time. So I just might be up. Time. I might catch some Zozo this next week.
Yeah, it's interesting to see who may be the guy to break through this week. I don't know anything about the golf course, but just looking at the field, Sahith Theegala is another guy who's coming off a nice Presidents Cup. Will Zalatoris. We got some guys that have played some nice golf this year. Minwoo Lee finally getting into an event without without a sponsor's invite. So
I think on the golf course, I think I had this right from researching maybe last year.
Oh, Xander's playing. I forgot about that.
So I think this golf course has 2 greens for depending on the season. Every hole has 2 greens, which I think is one of the coolest things. like in golf. It's a very unique thing. Every course couldn't do it, but they have the space on each of these holes to have a green for each season. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm so here for that. Sounds like a nightmare from trying to be a superintendent to deal with 36 greens on 18 holes. But yeah, I've played some events in Japan. And
what was that? You had a good when JT was on. You had a good spider story, Japan, trying to get relief from a large spider.
Dude, this place had the biggest spiders you've ever seen,
but like not all poisonous, right? Week.
Apparently, my ball, I shanked one into the woods in this long rough, and my ball was underneath a spider web, big old spider, man. And I obviously wanted relief from a dangerous situation. I mean, I'm in the trees. I'm not doing anything other than punching back out into the fairway. I had no angle to hit it at the green. And the rules official from Japan comes over, so he doesn't speak good English. And him and I got into it about, he said that they're no poisonous, play. And he like kept on trying to tell me, play. I'm like, dude, you hit it. I'm not hitting this. And eventually what he did was knock the spider off the web. And so I'm hitting a shot now where the spider is around the ball. And so I'm looking at this spider. I'm staring at the spider while I'm hitting this punch out back into the deal. And I was so dang hot, man. I did not want to be anywhere near that deal. And I'm not like afraid of spiders. They're just, these things were massive.
Well, are they like the size of your hand? Like, are they the orb weaving spiders? Like the black and yellow ones?
Aragog.
God, sick Lord of the Rings pull, dude. That's
not
really
Lord
good.
Of the Rings.
What's Aragog? That's Harry Potter. Secrets. That's Harry Potter. Sorry. God, that's a tough miss for me. Aragog is
Is that how you pronounce it? Aragog?
I think that's right. There's another one in Lord. I mean, Shelob's the one in Lord of the Rings. Golly, I did not expect
we're not
talking
a Lord
about
of the Rings
spider pod. Lore on the podcast tonight.
I've been trying to finish Lord of the Rings for like 2 years now. Can't get through it.
It's wow, Siri's chiming in here. Siri, your services are not needed right now.
She says it sucks too.
Yeah, I guess she's had enough Lord of the Rings stuff. She's like, wrap it up, dude. Get back to the golf. I love that story so much when JT told it. But I feel like it's almost better to have the spider on the web where you can see it than the spider's gone now and is trying to come back to its web. And at any moment in time, it could just reappear in your view while you're trying to hit a golf.
I'm over it. I'm over Japan golf because, yeah, it was a tough shank because... shanking it isn't fun. We don't shank shame here.
We don't. Yeah. If we shank shame here, I would not be in this seat. So we own those. We own those shanks. We own them as often as we can. I'll say this. We could do more tour talk if you want to, Smiley. But I think in the interest of time and topical items we want to cover here, there are a couple other places we would like to go.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest talk of the town, so to speak, in the golf world this week, has been the old PGA of America as they dial it in for the Ryder Cup next year at Bethpage. And the ticket prices have been eye-watering. I believe it's $750 for a day. And in researching the story,
That's like on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think. A little cheaper than before, but if you want to spend $500 for a practice round.
Well, and I'm also hearing now that in researching for the story that the volunteers have to pay close to $400 to volunteer for this thing. I'm definitely let's hear from all sides on this thing first. And I forget the individual. I have to track it down here. I have it in one of these links, but they've been trotting some poor sap out. The PGA of America has to like appear on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio and talk to golf.com and try to like do some damage control here. That is not a job I would want because
well. I saw the reasoning, and maybe you and I saw this exact same video, but he basically equated or tried to say that, you know, the Ryder Cup is a bucket list event for a lot of people. And yeah, it is. But in a time in which we're trying to grow the game, it seemed just silly to me that we're this high up for ticket prices, because I think the biggest issue that we have in this is, from a player standpoint, I'll give you this and I'll let you finish off this thought, is that from a player, you know where I stand on whether guys should get paid or not. I do think that players should get paid for playing the Ryder Cup. And I still feel like you can tote the I'm playing for my country, but I still feel like it's such a revenue generator. When you're charging $750 a head, how are you supposed to go to the players and say, hey guys, we're putting on a great event, y'all come on down? You're not going to get paid a dollar. Now, I know every single player would do anything in the world to play in this event. They don't need the money, but it's just hard to say. It's like, I mean, if they're making so much money, it's like, what is giving a player $100,000 in cash gonna do, right? Like, it's not gonna change their bottom line too off or too much on this. That's just where I stand on this thing.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'll say first, go to the comments here. We have Joseph Boza who chimes in, who comments on a lot of our YouTube videos. So Joseph, thanks for joining. Good seeing you here. He's saying $255 for a practice ticket, $425 for the opening ceremony, and $750 for competition. So all equally eye-watering in different ways. Yeah, this is an optics nightmare, Smiley, because I think the only real last human shield they can use as a line of defense is like, oh, we're taking all this and we're reinvesting this in grassroots golf. Because I think we need to start seeing some receipts on this, because that is to do exactly what you're saying. Again, I know you're playing for the pride of your country. You're playing in a competition that is time honored, and that, you know, every American or European is honored to go out and play in because of all the history that's there. But to then go around and ask for this much money from fans and then not even be able to give any of that as a cut to the participating players, when likely at this stage of the game, you know, things change. Like, we didn't pay college players, you know, football players or basketball players, right, any money just years ago, and the, you know, economies change and landscapes change, and now we do pay them because they're generating a ton of value for this thing. And they're talking about, you know, the reasons why this thing's so expensive, partially being in the New York market, you know, being at an iconic venue, Bethpage Black. But I think a lot of it has to do with the intrigue that these players have driven and all these recent competitions, and where we're at with, you know, a blowout at Whistling Straits, you know, and then the Euros turning around and winning in Rome when no one really gave them a chance even months before the competition. Those guys and those storylines are what's making this ticket in such high demand. So, you know, again, I know that's a whole separate topic, but it's a tough scene. It's like, if you are going to charge that much money, then pay the players. Or, you know, say that part of what you're doing with grassroots game growth in golf is charging less money so you can have kids come out and fall in love with the game and watch the Ryder Cup and get connected with it that way. Because there aren't very many grassroots level players that are going to be able to go to the Ryder Cup at that number. It feels like that's a lot of, you know, you're pricing a lot of people out of this thing.
Well, yeah, that's exactly the second point I was going to make in this is pricing out the target audience that I feel like would make the atmosphere go from one level to the next. And that's the, you know, the generation that the millennials, you know, the people that are in their 30s and the 20s, like, it's, you know, starting a family or people that are just getting out of college, the people that are going to create some energy in this thing. Those are the folks that are going to have, you know, go out there, drink some beer, have a good time with their buddies. And yeah, it is a bucket list deal, but that doesn't mean that it needs to be $750. Like, that is a lot of money. I don't know what the number should be. If it were me and if I just had to put a ballpark on it, I would say that if you asked me what a Ryder Cup ticket should cost, or what do you think it should cost, I would probably say like $250 would be like, I would understand that. $300 would be like, oh, okay, I could see how they got there. But I feel like this is a too corporate, the way these prices look to me, because corporations are going to gobble up these tickets and buy these $750 tickets, no problem, because why wouldn't you? It's one of the best events in the world, and to bring your clients out there to watch it out there is, you really can't beat that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It sucks.
That's a great point you're making too, about, we were getting very excited for the atmosphere there because it was going to be a raucous group of New Yorkers, you know, at Bethpage, and a team, the Americans.
It still will be. It's going to be nuts. Like, people are still going to pay. Let's not act like they're still not going to pay. It's just going to be, there's no sense, there's no reasoning in my opinion.
And I just wish, and again, you know, I'd love to really get the full deep dive on what, you know, because I think a lot of these stories, we just get hung up on one report and one number. And I'd love to, you know, be fair and get the full kind of breakdown from the PGA America of all the different levels of tickets you can buy. Because my thing on all this is I don't have a problem charging somebody $750. I just wish it was tiered better. Like, if you're telling me, and I think this ticket might be all inclusive of food and beverage. If you're telling me like, hey, I can buy a ticket and I can eat all I want to and drink all I want to, whatever, whatever. And it's going to be, you know, north of 500. I'm kind of doing the math on what I pay for a beer at some of these sporting events. And I'm at Bethpage. And, you know, if I want to get there early with my buddies, like, this thing might start to pencil if I'm paying a lot of money. But I think that, you know, then create a separate box for the 8-year-old who watched Rome at home with his dad and, you know, loved it and fell in love with the game that way. And it's like, hey, dad, can we go to the Ryder Cup? This is like, this is near us in New York. It's like, sorry, kid. Like, it's going to be $1,500 for both of us to go for one day. We just don't have that in the bank account right now. Like, I'd love to see a sub 300 tier for you know, families like that.
100%. And the other side of the coin, the people that were going to go in there, drink some beer and have a good time. This is what the PGA of America should do for those people. They should say, for every beer that you drink in there, we're going to knock $25 off of your ticket. And so now you show up with a goal. You said, I'm going to get this ticket all the way down to $250. And granted, we're not math guys, but that would be a plethora of beers.
Yeah, I think that that's the one way to get the New York crowd involved. Although the groundskeepers might have to do a little cleanup from some unfortunate accidents in and around those bleachers. I just the whole
that
thing
would be
is
20
so
beers if he got it to 250. So
math guy, how about that? 20 beers. Yeah. I think you could probably drink if you got there early enough. Probably do 20 beers right up day. New Yorkers, that's like a breakfast. Like that's no sweat.
It's
just
36 whole days, Friday and Saturday.
That's right. Yeah, and then 18 for singles on Sunday. Yeah, I mean, Garrett Clemens in the comments says I get in there free. Garrett, I don't want to try to do the math on that one, but if you can drink $750 worth of beers at 25 a beer, Godspeed, sir. Please film that and send it to us. We'll time lapse it and put it on our YouTube. I think that, yeah, it's just to me, it smacks of like there was so much good PR around this Ryder Cup in so many different ways. People were excited about some new blood with Keegan. You know, of course, Luke Donald back in the saddle for the Euros. Talking about the crowds and how it's going to be a ton of fun and great energy there. Even the Euros kind of getting miffed about, well, you know, Bethpage is going to be a bad environment and they're going to be rude and stuff like that. Like really all the stuff you want leading into a Ryder Cup. And then this feels a little bit like a self-inflicted wound. So yeah. Again, I want to hear the full picture.
It's a tough viewing week because you're only following four matches out on the golf course.
You really good point.
Have to get out in front to be able to see the groups that come through. If you try to walk with a group, you're not going to see hardly anything because it really is up by the green. It's 5-6 deep. I've seen it myself over in Europe for the Ryder Cup in Rome. So when you factor that in, you obviously want it to be big crowds, but what you also don't want too is for it not to be enough. And it'd be, you know, I think there was a lot of criticism for the US Open and LACC for those crowds. You know, they were limiting the amount of tickets that went in there. I think LACC bought up some of them because they didn't want it to be too much. And we saw a true US Open crowd at Pinehurst this year where it felt like a U.S. Open crowd, U.S. Open roars. That's what you want for the tournament. You want the Ryder Cup roars around the golf course to where you can tell when the U.S. wins a hole, and you'll still feel that. I just don't want to price out, like you said, the families and obviously the younger families that want to go that say, well, it's $750, and then when you throw in travel, you throw in it all. It's like that's too much.
Yeah, we'll see. I would not be shocked if there's some sort of a course correction between now and when this event is staged in September 2025. But it's certainly been an often talked about topic this last week. One man that is definitely going to be there in New York on the U.S. team, Scottie Scheffler, this week's guest picker on College Game Day, sporting the green jacket, of course, a Texas alum. I got to say this, Smiley, like I just love – it's interesting because I feel like early on in Scottie's career, you know, there was a sort of, he had the vanilla tag a little bit, and you know,
he did.
For whatever reason, maybe didn't want to do media early on because he wanted to kind of focus on the golf and just, you know, let that speak the volumes and take care of itself. And then, you know, now he's won two majors, won the Masters twice, and he's, you know, undoubtedly the best player in the world. And I don't know if that's just been a sea change this offseason where he's like, okay, I'm going to do some podcasts. You know, I'm going to go on with Colt and Drew. I'm going to do the guest picker thing. I'm going to kind of open up a little bit more. I'm loving it. And I thought this was yet another hilarious appearance in a little, you know, poking fun at the Miami Louisville pick of his time in Louisville and the whole jail thing. I thought it was really, really fun.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it. I was out playing golf. But the rumor that I heard was that Pat was going to put on an orange jumpsuit and come out and make the Louisville pick. It didn't happen. But from what I understood, there was talks that would happen, which would have been absolutely hysterical. But it would have been a tough look. I know the green jacket, you kind of have to get permission to wear that to certain events. And so when you wear it to game day, it's great exposure, obviously, for the Masters. It's cool for Scotty to wear it because it's a great flex. But then you got your jail thing with the orange jumpsuit right next to him. I don't know where the chain of command happened, where it got shut down, but I know it was being talked about.
Yeah, that is very interesting inside intel. That would have been a hilarious moment. But yeah, I think we've heard in the past John Rahm talking about, you know, Augusta National needing to approve the outfit that you're wearing the jacket with. And in this case, probably approving other people's outfits you're being seen with on television. So although we're not to put it past Pat McAfee, a couple comments here. Joseph Boza, Garrett Clemens both talking about JL changing him. And as much as we kind of say it tongue in cheek to a certain degree, I think it does in a way, and it's probably a combination of a number of different things, right? Like it's having his son, having your first kid, you're a dad, you know, your perspective on the world continues to change. He has a strong faith. So he's already rooted in that, but you know, becoming a dad gives you a different sort of identity. And then, you know, I think just he was always the best ball striker on the planet, but then getting the putting fixed this year and kind of taking that stress and weight off his back doesn't make him any less competitive. But I just think that there are a number of different things that happened this last year, and the jail thing included, where you kind of take, you know, exhale a little bit. And you continue to hear stories about him where you're like, man, that guy sounds so cool to hang out with. And I hope we get to continue seeing more and more of that side of Scotty, because it continues to remove that vanilla tag and make us love this guy who's the best player on the planet.
Yeah, I got to experience firsthand. It is a lot of fun. He's a great time. And the way I'll spin this and kind of about Scotty of what you just talked about with, you know, being too vanilla, not really knowing who he is. And yes, him going to jail made him an internet sensation and made a lot of people who don't turn into golf tune in to watch the number one player in the world go try to play golf after going to jail. But what I think about is the Scottie Scheffler that showed up on Sunday to go try to win his first Masters, and how it was his first really big moment to break through, you know, step through that door, and this is going to be, you know, his breaking out party. He goes on to win that. If you recall, right, like it wasn't just like easy on the 18th green. He might still be putting there, right? Like he was putting around that hole like he was never going to make the putt. And so I think we've grown from I think the results have, you know, that showing up, and then already the natural talent that we all knew he had has really kind of merged together into a force that's, okay, now you have a super, super competitive guy with all the talent in the world that now his belief bar is so high up. But then you found all of these different fans now that have a general interest of Scotty, from whether it be the jail deal or if it's watching him play golf or us talking about how good he is and how he is breaking some things that Tiger has done, from a whether it's a tee to green statistic or how many wins he had this year. And when we talk and compare him to Tiger Woods, I think generally people start to think about that, hey, this is, you know, are we witnessing a guy that could be the next great player. And I think right now that's where we're at with Scotty heading into the offseason. I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to the table next year. But I think that's – why do people wait when it comes to – you know, why do people have to see the results to go make it happen? I think for him, the one big result was winning that Masters. And then what we've seen after that is him just continue to improve and get better.
Yeah. I think he talked about just that walk to the first tee of Valhalla, the day he was released from jail that morning. It was, you know, dubbed over by 50 Cent, many men on social media, a number of different times.
Many men.
But
upon me.
I think it's, yeah, I don't know how much more we can sing of that before we get a copyright DMCA takedown notice. But and listen, I mean, in an episode where we've discussed your inability to hit the high notes on Drops of Jupiter, I'm glad you've got the many men 50 Cent range. So good on you.
Let's go.
Okay. I think the thing that is maybe interesting about that is maybe less. I mean, obviously it was a tragedy that preceded what happened with Scotty, and he talked about that. And, you know, the jail itself, of course, a jarring experience, but he's even talked about that being boring. I think maybe the part of that that's most interesting is a guy who hasn't shown a ton of himself publicly to his fans. You just kind of know him as this robot golfer in a sense. Not wondering how people are going to respond to him when he enters a situation like that. And is it going to be good, or is it going to be bad? Are people going to criticize him, or are people going to support him? And to come to the tee where people have already like screen printed t-shirts that say Free Scotty with his mugshot on him, and they're cheering for him, and you know, huge swell of support. I think for him, it's like, oh, wow, these people, they really like me. And, you know, the interest, to your point, grows much further, much, you know, beyond just the game of golf. You have all these people kind of tuning in to see how he's going to respond. Doesn't get it done that week, of course, because the emotional letdown was huge. But I think just a moment in maybe less of his golf playing career, more of his, you know, career as a brand, just like, oh, wow, like I am marketable. People like me. If I continue to show more of myself to these people, they might get behind this bandwagon. And that's just why I love to see what we're seeing from Scotty this offseason. I hope we see more of it.
Yeah, me too. Sure has been fun to watch, and the support that you talk about, that's the last thing I'll mention about it, is that the crowds that I see from 2 years ago to where they are now, it's happening. The movement is here. The Scotty movement is here. He gets the biggest crowds out there, easily the fan favorite. And he's such a likable guy, but the competitiveness thing is what sticks out to me in spending time around him.
Smiley, this is what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you the chance to give us some final thoughts. I'm going to proceed that by saying, I'm looking at this little side panel where I usually play the outro, and I'm not sure if it's going to play or not. So I'm just going to, if it doesn't work, I'm just leading with that, and I'll just throw up a panel and I'll put more house music back on. So I'm just setting expectations for everybody here. Okay. That's what's going to happen. So first to you, Smiley, do you have any final thoughts before we take this one out?
Final thoughts. LSU's got a big game this Saturday. We go on the road to play Texas A&M. Both teams are undefeated in the SEC. Could be the season for us. So I'm looking forward to that game. Looking forward to seeing my family this next week. And, yeah, we got a lot of good things in the kicker that I'm excited about. Good guests coming on the show. And, yeah, we'll see if I can go play some golf and enjoy you know, still this great time of the year to play golf, and with the leaves changing, faster greens, firmer conditions. So lots to be excited about for not only me, for a lot of folks around the country to enjoy this fall weather.
Without a doubt. And let's see if this outro works here. Of course, everyone, thank you for watching and listening as always, hoping to sprinkle in more of these live shows the rest of the way this fall, because we always love engaging. Appreciate everyone hanging out in the chat. And yeah, let's see if the outro works, Smiley. Oh, this is not looking good. I had to figure this out another time. This is a real shame. Okay, well, as promised, cheers.
Cheers, everyone.
And here's the minimalist house music. And we'll put this on, and then we're going to do a little... Oh, yeah. This is great music. Ha 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 ha
I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.